the sixth chapter of Proverbs for the last 2 weeks, and we will get out of it this week. And for those of you that missed it, we're going to quickly go through the previous verses that we've already covered, and basically we'll pick back up in the "My son, observe the commandment of your father" in verse 20. Again, for those of you that might not have been here before, we're studying Proverbs. Proverbs is the Greek word, I believe, is a mashal, which is a short, pithy, brief story that has packed with lots of doctrine and lots of application. And we found that to be so. Basically, Proverbs 6, 1 through 3, "My son, if you have become surety for your neighbor, have given a pledge for a stranger." And here we're talking about basically you're co-signing a note. And it's a note for a non-family member, a neighbor, or an absolute stranger. "If you've been snared with the words of your mouth," and boy, isn't that easy. All of us have been snared with the words of our mouth. We've, as it says in the Hebrew, it's struck hands. So we have struck hands on a deal, snared with the words of your mouth. You've been caught up with the words of your mouth. "Do this then, my son, and deliver yourself." And so notice it doesn't say just suck it up and live up to it. It says be a wise man and realize you've made a mistake and try and deliver yourself from it. Since you've come into the hand of your neighbor, go humble yourself and importune your neighbor. Well, go humble yourself is obviously you will eat a little bit of crow and tell him, "Man, if I really messed up and I wasn't wise in this decision," and such. And then importune your neighbor is basically go argue your way out of it. Go negotiate your way out of it. "Do not give sleep to your eyes nor slumber to your eyelids." And then basically that is telling us that it is not something that you want to drag on. You know, and it just makes common sense. If you drag on a bad decision, you're going to find yourself having to continue to live with that bad decision. And nobody wants to do a deal. If somebody comes up to you shortly after having done a deal and comes to you and says, "Man, I really, you know, I've reconsidered this and it really was unwise of me, and what can I do to get out of it? And, you know, how do we restructure it or what can we do?" Well, then guess what? More than likely, the guy's going to try and restructure the deal. Deliver yourself as like a gazelle from the hunter's hand, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Then we talked about there's like 186, I think it is, different characterizations throughout all the Proverbs. And we've done little vignettes of different ones. And here we're going to learn something else about the sluggard. And over time, I think we've done one on the adulterous woman and characterized her and contrasted her with the righteous woman. Well, here we're going to learn a little bit about the sluggard. "Go to the ant, O sluggard." And so basically he's saying you can learn from nature. And this happens, you know, throughout the Bible. And he points the sluggard to the ant. And he says to the sluggard, "Go to the ant, observe her ways and be wise." So you can gain some wisdom through the natural process. You know, and I think it was in the first chapter, second chapter, you know, it talked about wisdom was in the streets, you know, hollering at you. It was in the market square. Well, guess what? There's some wisdom in nature that can be observed as well. And so what do we observe about the ant? The ant has no chief, officer, or ruler. So, you know, they have no set government. There's not any top-down authority in reference to the ants. But what do? They prepare her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. And so, you know, it talks about how the ants will go out and prepare their food. And I think I use the analogy of the cutter ant here in Texas that will chop down your trees and shrubs, takes it down, puts it in a hole, and basically grows mushrooms that it lives off of. So the ants are quite industrious. They're not just going and living off of the fat of the land at the time there's fat on the land. They're actually going out and preparing and storing up their food and their harvest. "How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep?" A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of hands to rest, and your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man. Here again, the Bible is a great book of balance. And so, you know, we know that on the seventh day God rested, and we know that it talks about in the Bible that, you know, the day of rest is important, so on and so forth. But it also says right here, a little sleep, a little slumber, and a little folding of hands, and you're going to be broke. Just like in the Bible it talks about, you know, take the speck out of your, before you take the speck out of the eye of your neighbor, take the log out of your own. Or where it talks about we're to bear one another's burdens, but everyone's to carry their own load. All right. Well, guess what? The sluggard is obviously on the scale of spending all of his time in the prone position. All right. And if you think about it, they didn't have welfare where the check showed up in the mail. And generally, if a sluggard lays around and lets things get bad enough, he's going to have to turn to crime and some other things because there wasn't the kind of welfare system that we have here. All right. And so they were commanded, you know, or basically it was using the contrast of don't lay around, because a little bit of slumber, a little bit of folding of hands, and you're going to find yourself broke. Poverty will come in like a vagabond. A vagabond was basically a foreigner from another country, and your need like an armed man, which would, you know, be relative to Roman soldier or government soldier. A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a false mouth, who winks with his eyes, who signals with his feet, who points with his fingers, who with perversity in his heart devises evil continually, who spreads strife. So here again, a worthless person, a wicked man, one who walks with a false mouth. All right? Worthless there in the eyes of God. You know, this is going to be a person that is outside the plan of God, someone that's not aspiring to being a believer and becoming a full-blown mature believer. This is a wicked man who walks with a false mouth. You know, back in their day, you know, when you struck hands, you know, you gave your word. You know, in their day, word was all you had. You know, you didn't really even have contracts. You didn't have all kinds of other things that we have today in an attempt to define somebody's word. You just had this guy's word against this guy's word. In fact, you know, if you think about in the context of all of this, you know, most of the teaching went from the father to the son to the grandson. And how did it go? It went very much like this. It went with proverbs. It went with stories, parables. It went with pithy statements, you know, do this and do that and don't do this and don't do that kind of a thing. So here you have the worthless person who has a false mouth. He winks with his eyes, and basically that's if he's fixing to scam you, he's winking with the other person he's scamming you with. Has signals with his feet, points with his fingers. So this gives you the understanding that it's with malice. You know, this isn't somebody that just made a misstatement or a miscalculation. This is somebody that goes into it ready to put the scam on. This is somebody that is trying to steal your money, steal your heart, steal your way, and it's not just kind of an honest mistake in business. Who with perversity in his heart devises evil continually. You know, the funny thing is that once somebody goes down this path and this is how they make their living, you know, today what we do is we take the con man, we turn him straight, and then we hire him to show us how our business can't get conned again. You know, you see these guys on the Discovery Channel and stuff like that that, you know, spent all their life stealing stuff, and then big corporations have hired them to come in and tell them how to prevent people like them from doing it to them, and have ended up turning them honest, relatively speaking. Well, guess what? In this point in time, you know, that wasn't really an option. They hadn't turned crime to the fine art that we have today. And so basically this person starts out with perversity in their heart and they devise evil continually because they have gone down that path. Several times through Proverbs it's talked about, you know, if you think about it, it was, I think it's chapter 1, where the young man went to the other young man and said, come with us, we're going to lay in the weeds, we're going to kill somebody, we're going to steal their money, we're going to create a great plunder, and then we're going to divide it equally. And you all know that that's my pet peeve, or not pet peeve, but I find it ridiculous that these thieves are going to divide it equally, because every good Western, they shoot each other up over dividing up the booty at the end of it, okay? But what did God say? He said, you know, through Solomon, he said, you know, basically, don't go. Don't say yes. Don't even go down that path. All throughout Proverbs, it talks about don't start down that path. It tells us about the afterward. It tells us about what the end result is at the same time that it tells us don't go down that path. And the reason is that once you go down that path, in today's situation, short of you having a renewed spirit through Jesus Christ and putting some Bible doctrine in your soul, you're not coming back. Once you break off the path and you start in these activities, Proverbs tells us what the end result is. You know, if you go and you lay with a strange woman, the end result is that path heads to Sheol. That's where her steps are going. And we explain the analogy of why they always talk about paths is because in that society you walked everywhere. And we have seen, you know, pictures from Jeremy's trips and others how rough the terrain is. And so a good path is a very important thing as far as your personal comfort goes. Because a bad path and you're three mountains over and here you come. And it's really rough and rocky terrain. And so basically, in Proverbs, we're taught not to get off the right path. The right path is very, very, very important. And how many of us, through our own personal experience in life, realize how important that is? A lot of our friends started out with just a little infraction. And you could tell they were getting a little bit off the path. And then, you know, you go to your 20th high school reunion and you find out where that path finally got them to. And generally it's not a good situation. And so even though it may seem politically incorrect today to, you know, exhort our children and one another not to go down that path, the reality is Proverbs is telling us where that path is going. And so when you find the worthless person, the wicked man, you know, one that starts, that talks with false mouth and is doing bad deals and winking the eyes and pointing the fingers and so on and so forth, and they have perversity in their heart, they're going to continue to desire evil. Which is kind of interesting because this kind of flies in the face of a lot of what some people think we can do in reference to reforming people and you know, training them out of their problems, and it's environmental and it's so on and so forth. And I don't find anything in Proverbs to suggest that people that do evil and people that devise evil and continually devise evil have environmental problems. I'm not even sure you can support environmental problems biblically. In fact, I'm pretty certain you can't. Just based on my experience since, counting years now, 41 years of studying and going to Bible churches and such. So I don't believe that you can. Because where is the problem? You know, Solomon tells us the problem is in the soul. The problem is inclining your ear to wisdom. The problem is in not being willing to have the fear of the Lord, the beginning of knowledge. And not seeking knowledge, not holding knowledge more and wisdom more important than silver and gold. And so basically, here we see the path of the perverse and the wicked man. Therefore, his calamity will come suddenly. Instantly, he will be broken, and there will be no healing. So, here again, all throughout the sixth chapter of Proverbs, it tells us where that end result comes. In fact, all of Proverbs is telling us, you start down this path, here's where you're headed. Now let me explain to you what you're going to find in the middle. 16 to 19, there are six things which the Lord hates. Yes, seven which are an abomination to Him. And here again, this 6 and 7, 2 and 3 has been used elsewhere in the Bible. And a lot of people consider that basically the seventh is, if you do a 6 things that He hates and 7 which are an abomination, the seventh one is the one that kind of chaps in the most, I guess would be the way to put it. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and the last one, and one who spreads strife among brothers. All right, well, the haughty eyes, a lying tongue, obviously we all understand that one of the categories of sin is the sins of the tongue. You have mental attitude sins, you have sins of actions, and you have sins of the tongue. And I think anyone will know and everyone understands what a lying tongue can do. And there is scriptures all throughout the Bible talking about how to control your tongue. You know, slow to speak. You know, don't bear false witness. And so on and so forth. The haughty eyes. There's a couple ways to look at that. You know, the haughty eyes can also mean the eyes of the prostitute that are, you know, highly decorated and so on and so forth. It also can have an interpretation of looking down upon the world. Okay? And of course, we all know that we're sinners saved by grace, and therefore we shouldn't have that kind of haughty eyes. And if your makeup's so bad you got haughty eyes, then we need to all take up a collection and send you to Merle Norman's in Kerrville and see if they can teach you how to put your makeup on. Anyway, hands that shed innocent blood. And here again, notice it says shed innocent blood. You know, we have young men in Iraq that are fighting for our freedom, and they're not shedding innocent blood. They're in the middle of a war. And so there's a difference between killing and murdering. And here they're talking about basically murder. Yes. You can, if you're in the military and you're in a war and you're killing somebody, you're killing. You're not murdering. Murdering is the taking of innocent blood, and it's also not anything that's sanctioned in reference to your government. Yeah, there's wars and rumors of wars till Christ comes back. A heart that devises wicked plans, of which we, you know, covered up there in verses, I think, 15 back to about 12. And I think I've probably waxed eloquent enough about that. Feet that run rapidly to evil. So the implication here is it'd be more favorable if your feet ran slowly to evil than rapidly to evil. Okay? But what is the feet run rapidly to evil gives the implication that basically they're ready. You know, they're ready for evil, and they immediately go to evil. They're predisposed to evil. What is that? How would we put that in our time? That would be somebody that basically is what? They're processing life through the old sin nature. That's why they're quickly running to evil. I've used many times the illustration of you have some stimulus in life that comes into your purview. And it may be something that you did or maybe something you didn't do. And you immediately have to make a decision. How am I going to process that? How am I going to react? In fact, you know, watch somebody's reactions and then I'll tell you more about that person than their actions. Given enough time, you can muster up the right action. But when it's like that and you have to react, then guess what? That tells you what your soul's hardwired with. And what this is saying is that the ones that run rapidly to evil basically tell you their soul is hardwired with the old sin nature. That's why they run rapidly. You know, you can have a Christian that'll still make a bad decision, which will basically move it toward evil, all right, and commit sin, but the one that runs rapidly to it tells you that when it comes time to make that split-second decision, they're always going to go on the old sin nature's viewpoint. In fact, I think I used in teaching the youth on Wednesday for Lee Neal, who was out, I used the analogy of all of a sudden you look over and some guy looks at you and says, you blankety blank, 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 what are you looking at me like that for? You know, how do you respond to that? Because all of a sudden, here's this guy, I mean, he's swearing at you, he's in your face, and all you did was turn around and look at the guy. Well, guess what? That'll tell you a lot about how you're hardwired, because now you got a lot of things going on. You got fight and flight. You got, you know, am I going to cuss back at him or not? Or, you know, how am I going to respond? So here again, feet that run rapidly to evil gives the implication that they're being run by the old sin nature. And I think the analogy of how you react to life is as important, if not more important, than how you act in life. A false witness who utters lies. Now, the interesting thing is, what's the difference between a false witness uttering lies and a lying tongue? Well, they're both a lie, but there's a difference, okay? A barren false witness has a little bit more of a, well, it's a different bent on lying. In other words, you're now up and you're testifying and bearing false witness against somebody that is being judged by the accounts that the witnesses give. You know, it's not quite the same as telling a lie. And here again, you know, most people will lie to generate their own benefit. Right? I mean, if you think about it, most lies are either you're trying to puff yourself up and look better or so on and so forth. Well, you know, bearing false witness has a whole different connotation, because it's not just trying, I guess you could be bearing false witness and saying, I swear I didn't pull the trigger, he did. But other than that kind of a scenario, it has more of a vengeance involved in it. And the other reality is then it starts to get into the judicial system and how even in Solomon's times, how judges would judge things. Remember the story of Solomon when he became king, and one of the things they thought he was so wise about was we had the two women that both had children, very young children, and one of them accidentally laid on her child and killed it. And the other lady woke up. Well, this lady took her dead child, put it next to this lady, and then took her alive child and had it next to her. Well, this lady woke up, found out the child was dead, looks at it and says, gosh, that's not my kid. And so they brought it to Solomon. And so what have we got? We got, you know, the maternal swearing match. Now, could you imagine being a judge? I wouldn't want to judge anything worse than the maternal swearing match. This is my child, and this is her child, and she accidentally killed hers, and so on and so forth. And so what did he do? He finally said, well, says, obviously I can't figure out whose child it is, so I'm just going to put the child to death. And then the mother, the true mother, said, oh, no, don't do that. Just, she can have it. All right? And then he said, okay, and he figured out that's really her child, because the other woman didn't really have much of a trouble with him putting it to death. And that was one way that Solomon in his youth displayed his wisdom and his ability for discernment. You know, here again, Solomon was known as one of the most wise men, and hence that's why he is the one that wrote Proverbs. And I think he did like 3,000 Proverbs. And the wisdom, when we use the word wisdom in relation to Proverbs, it's talking about skillful living. All of these things that we're talking about here is helping us to be able to live more skillfully. Well, obviously, life can get a little bit problematic if we're allowing a lot of people to go around bearing false witness. You know, and here again, the last one, and one who spreads strife among brothers. And after this, we'll get into new territory. And I think I used the analogy last week. It is, you know, this can be one that does it with absolute malice, and everyone knows that it's malice. And it's the person that basically figures out a way to create strife among brothers. But, you know, this can also be perpetuated under the cloak of being a very sensitive and concerning Christian. I mean, and this would come into the fold in the area of someone calling up and saying, we need to pray for John. you know, I need your help. We need to pray for John. We need to get this moved around because John and Mary are having troubles. You know, and all of a sudden, well, I didn't know John and Mary were having troubles. Well, yeah, John and Mary are having troubles. And we need to pray for them. Well, what are the troubles? You know? Well, next thing you know, guess what? We just got carte blanche to do all the gossiping we want to do. Okay? And so you can spread strife among the brethren even while you're doing it, utilizing the prayer chain of the church. And I think that's probably one reason that you find the seventh one, and if you aspire to the seventh one being the worst of the seven, using the six things that the Lord hates and the seven which are an abomination, you know, spreading strife among brothers can be done by those that aren't necessarily bearing false witness. They're kind of gossiping. They're not necessarily devising wicked plans. They're not the continually doing evil, but they just enjoy a good chew on a good story. And so here again, spreading strife among the brothers is not necessarily an occupation that's just of those that would certainly not be known as believers and certainly not be known as anyone aspiring to engage in the sanctification process to maturity. This can be done by those that are believers and those that are attempting to go through the sanctification process and become mature believers. But they found an excellent opportunity to spread strife among the brothers. I think we've all witnessed enough of that, so I won't even say anything else about it. Proverbs 20:23, "My son, observe the commandment of your father, and do not forsake the teaching of your mother." Here again, we've seen this probably about 10 times so far in just the first six verses, and we've used the illustration of how my son, this is not necessarily Solomon strictly speaking to his son, but it's indicative of the method of teaching that was in Israel at that time, coming from father to grandfather and so on and so forth. And again, I might note that in other verses it's talked about that this teaching is sound teaching, meaning that it's teaching that has standed the test of time. It's teaching that the father and grandfather have actually seen the results of it. You know, being 49 years of age, when I read Proverbs, it means a lot more to me in a lot of different ways than it did when I was 29 or 19 or 9. All right? And I'm sure that when I'm 69, it'll mean even more to me, because the longer you live, the more that you get to see some of the consequences of this conduct and behavior actually play out. Bind them continually on your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you walk about, they will guide you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. Here again, bind them continually on your neck. Now, we talked about the many adornments that they would wear around their neck, and head dressings and such. Even more importantly than, you know, tying them around your neck is the binding and them continually on your heart. And here again, obviously, that's not the organ that pumps your blood. We're talking about your core beliefs, your soul, the morals and standards with which you act on. That when you have that split second decision, guess what? That's you're acting with your heart. And that's why those that continually devise evil have evil in their heart. There are certainly times that we as sinful beings will commit sin, but those of us that have saving knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ have a different heart. When you walk about, they will guide you. Here again, we go back to that illustration of walking. Them people are always walking back then. All right? For our time, we might say that it's the eternal GPS with guidance system of how to find that store you're looking for or whatever. All right? It's you will be guided through God's Word and through the wisdom that has been imparted to you from generation to generation. When you sleep, it will watch over you. And here again, if you think about it, in the time in which this was written, being able to have a restful night's sleep and not be concerned with somebody trying to mug you or something trying to get you, certainly has its benefit. And if you have followed the teaching of your mother, and if you followed the commandments of your father, then guess what? You're going to be able to sleep more peacefully because you will have a contentment of knowing that those consequences that they had exposed you to were not going to befall you. And when you awake, they will talk to you. For the commandment is a lamp, and the teaching is light. You know, here again, and when you awake, they will talk to you. This goes back to my analogy of how we process life. I'll never forget, it was, I guess it's 10 years now. I happened to be teaching the junior high school or high school. Princess Diana died. And there's a couple kids in that class who were all torn up about Princess Diana dying. And I mean, I wasn't crass about it or anything, but I said, well, why are y'all torn up about Princess Diana? And I said, oh, well, she was just such a great person, and she was just this, and she was just that. And I said, yeah, but you equate her to Jesus Christ, and she's a scum bucket, you know, when you get right down to it. And what did I do? I assisted them in processing her death, you know, and I'm, don't get me wrong, I had nothing against Princess Diana. I didn't want her to die or anything. But I helped them process her death in the continuum of history and life and in relation to Jesus Christ. And that she might have been a pretty good person here on earth, but in relation to Jesus Christ, she's nothing. In relation to Jesus Christ, we're all nothing. In fact, if you think about where it talks about the fear of the Lord being the beginning of knowledge, I personally think that what it really is, and I think it can be supported biblically, is the fear of the Lord is really gaining the proper perspective of how insignificant we really are in relation to God and His plan, and especially in relation to His Son, Jesus Christ. And so what did I do? I assisted them in being able to discern a current event through the prism of biblical doctrine. Well, here it says, and when you awake, they will talk to you. These commandments, these teachings, these parables, these proverbs. How often as we grow in the Word do we discern life differently? I don't know about you all. I watch the news differently. I listen to radio differently. I certainly listen to commentary differently. Granted, sometimes I get so mad I can't see straight, but I label that righteous indignation just in case. It's my defense, okay? Whether that's defense or not. But so you basically watch the entire world differently. And so if we teach Bible doctrine to our children, you know, and it talks about that when they're your children, you're supposed to teach them, and then they go off, and that the things that we have taught them, the Word, will come back to protect them and be with them for life. Doesn't mean that they're not going to go in a direction you don't want them to. Doesn't mean that they don't take that little right-hand turn off the path and find themselves suffering some of the consequences that are here in Proverbs. All right? But it's our job as parents to give them the Word. It's our job as parents to give them Bible doctrine, to expose them to the Proverbs and the teaching. And so here he says, son, if you do this, and you bind it to your heart. See, notice the difference here is here you have a child that's positive to God's Word. Here you have a child that's actually going to bind it to his heart and embrace it. It's our job as parents to teach our children. But you know what? We can't make them incline their ear to understanding. We can't make them desire wisdom more than silver. We can't make them desire wisdom more than the foreign woman or the adulterous woman. Right? We can't make them continually bind it to their heart. But if they do, as in all of Proverbs, what do? We give them the end result. If you do this, what's going to happen is that when you walk around, it's going to guide you. Therefore, it's going to make you make better decisions. It's going to give you skill in living. You know, you're going to sit there and go, well, gosh, I could go to college and I could get a master's in basket weaving, or I could get something that might get me a job when I get out of school. Gosh, which do I want to choose? All right? Well, hopefully if you've instilled some, maybe just even some common sense, but definitely if you've instilled some Bible doctrine in them, they'd realize that when I get out, I'm going to eventually become the head of some household. I better figure out how to make a buck. And so I'm not going to get a master's in basket weaving. I'm going to get a bachelor's in something that will get me a job. And so it'll guide their steps. And when they sleep, it'll watch over them. And when they are awake, it will be talking to them. They will process life using the biblical standards and the doctrine that you've given to them. For the commandment is a lamp and the teaching is light. And reproofs for discipline are the way of life. Here again, the reproofs for discipline. In earlier Proverbs, and I couldn't find it real quick, but in earlier Proverbs, it talks about how that we are supposed to rejoice in the reproof and the discipline. Because a parent that doesn't reprove or discipline their child doesn't love them. Just like we know that when we find ourselves being disciplined, it's from God's love. Because discipline does what? Discipline is for instruction. You know, it's not just, you don't spank a child just to beat the living daylights out of them. That's not why you do it. You know, why do you do it? You do it to give them instruction and to guide them in their path. I have news for you. Every time I got spanked, I knew exactly what I was getting spanked for, and I knew exactly what I needed to do to avoid it the next time. All right? It was real simple. And so guess what? I got spanked a whole lot less and less and less. And I had two brothers that helped me get spanked. They helped me. My oldest brother used to take a ballpoint pen and draw mustaches on me while I was taking a nap. And I was bigger than him by about fourth grade. And he's 4 years older than me. And so Mom or Dad would come in just about the time I got Dan down and was throttling him real good. They didn't notice that I had a mustache. I got spanked anyway. All right, so I had brothers, you know, you got brothers that are helping you in all this stuff. But we all knew we were loved, and it wasn't abusive or anything like that. It was very instructional. We knew exactly what the instruction was. Well, guess what? You know, we have a whole generation of kids out there. Oh, you thought I always had that mustache. Yeah, I have. I've had this mustache for 40 years. I started getting it when I was 9. You know, we have a whole generation that basically has not had reproof and discipline. Discipline for them was go, you know, have a timeout and go sit in the corner. You know, that doesn't solve anything. That doesn't tell the child what they did wrong. That doesn't give them any impetus for continuing to do it right. You know, that gives them no real, you know, most of the kids that are having those kinds of troubles, they're just daydreaming in the corner just like they were daydreaming in life, which is what got them in trouble in the first place. So, guess what? The commandment is a lamp and the teaching is light. It's to illuminate our path. It's to let us see where we need to go, what we need to do. It's what allows us to make that quick decision, that reaction in life, that's going to be appropriate and correct. And reproofs for discipline are the way of life. Without discipline, you don't have life. You know, our society here has got the do your own thing mentality. And if you take the do your own thing mentality to the end, it's anarchy. It's not anything any of us want to live in. All right? Think about it. If everybody just totally lacked discipline, you couldn't drive a car from here to Kerrville. I couldn't come from Kerrville to come teach this morning. Why? Because we'd have people on the wrong side of the road trying to kill me. I already got the RVs and everybody else trying to kill me between here and there, but I'd have people on the wrong side of the road. So you've got to have reproof and discipline to keep you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her catch you with her eyelids. For on account of a harlot, one is reduced to a loaf of bread. And an adulteress hunts for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned. Let's go through this section here. To keep you from the evil woman, here again, the reproof, the correction, the light is supposed to do what? And of course, most of this chapter is about the adulterous woman. It's to keep you from the evil woman. It's to allow you not to fall prey and be snared by her. And here again, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress, in earlier verses it's talked about it, you know, she drips like honey. And here again, I'll point out for some of you that hadn't been here recently, don't forget, Solomon gave us this proverb, and later in life he fell into this exact trap. So no deal's perfect. Even if you know about the adulterous woman, you have got to be disciplined and vigilant to stay away from her. Do not desire her beauty in your heart. And there again, do not desire her beauty in your heart is kind of like that path. As soon as you start desiring her beauty in your heart, what are you doing? You've taken the first step off the path. And then if you take the next step, what are you going to do? You're going to not do what we've learned in previous Proverbs, and that's stay away from her house, her window, don't go by her path, you know, don't let yourself cross her path, basically. Stay away from her. So as soon as you start desiring in her heart, the woman, then guess what? You're going to figure out how to run into her. I think some of y'all remember my old Benny Graham's illustration of, you know, seeing she's a cute girl walking down the street's not a sin, but going around the back of the building and down the block to catch another look is kind of deal. And I mean, he was 90 something years old when he used that at the brown bag study one day. All right, so guess what? Don't, you know, as soon as you start to desire another look, you're going to go around the block to check it out. So do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her catch you with her eyelids. So the first thing is if you start to desire her, so even if you fail on the first one, if you can live up to the second one, then guess what? You're probably okay. Because if you don't let her eyelids catch you, she's not going to be able to give you that come hither look. She's not going to be able to look at you with sultry eyes and you all of a sudden, in your mind, and away you go. You know, as a father with two daughters, it's an interesting prospect as they start to get old enough to know that boys exist, because you know what goes on in all those boys' minds. See, we even have a bird chirping outside in conjunction with that. Boy, this is a real nature deal, isn't it? Spring is sprung, and we're just talking about boys and girls. All right? So, basically, you know, the adulterous woman has got a lot of leverage on the guy. As soon as the guy starts to notice her, as soon as he starts to desire, and as soon as he starts to let her give him that come hither look with the eyes, then we're in trouble. We're in trouble. You know, it's kind of like hunting is real big around here, as we all know. You know, and many times I've used that as the illustration in training my daughters that how crazy boys can get. I said, you know, there's a bunch of does by the feeder. You just wait. There'll be a buck here real quick. It's cold. It's the middle of November. They're in rut, and they'll come right out, won't even look, and here they come. Sure enough, here comes that deer, just busting right through. Any other time of year, he'd sit back there for 3 hours, wait till it's dark, and come out and eat. But guess what? You know, at that point in time, he had her beauty in his heart, and he's going to catch her eyes, and here he comes. For an account of a harlot, one is reduced to a loaf of bread. This has got an interesting interpretation, because there are some old manuscripts that talked about in this time there were so many harlots out there and so many adulterous women, strange women, streetwalkers, however you want to phrase them, that literally you could have one for a loaf of bread. That was the cost. Now, I'll be like George Bush when they ask him one day how much a gallon of milk costs, and he didn't know. I don't know. What does a loaf of bread cost? Because I don't shop. Fortunately, I have a wonderful wife that goes to the store and brings that stuff home. What's a loaf of bread? Ladies, here's, what does it cost?
Well, depends on what you want.
Thank you, Linda.
Bread for $4.
All right, so you could get a cheap girl for $1.25 or a great girl for $4. In fact, maybe you could get a cheap girl for $1.25 and several girls for $4. I don't know. But what I mean by that is it was real cheap back then. Also, this has been interpreted as, when we read in previous verses how that the adulterous woman will take your vigor away and will take your money away and so on and so forth, that basically this reduces the man down to where all he's got is a loaf of bread, that he's broke. And basically I think both of them are pretty illustrative of what the end result is in dealing with the adulterous woman, so we'll just leave it like that. And an adulteress hunts for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Now that's an interesting conundrum. And what it is it's a great little illustration of what it said a little bit higher of don't desire her beauty in your heart. As soon as you take her beauty into your heart, or how she smells, or how she talks, or how whatever, okay? As soon as you take that into your heart, the question is, can you hold that in your heart and not get burned? And I would imagine the answer is no. Just like you can't take fire into your bosom and your clothes not be burned. And so here's another illustration of how that you don't want to get started down that path. As soon as you start down that path, you're in trouble. Or can a man walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? And so apparently we had coal walkers even back in this point in time. And I think the illustration there is, if you're stupid enough to walk on hot coals, you better be prepared for your feet to get burned. So is the one who goes to his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her will not go unpunished. The punishment for adultery back in this time was death. In fact, we don't have time to go to it, but I think it's Leviticus 25:39, if I'm not mistaken. And basically through there, there was a lot of death for sexual immorality in that point in time. And literally, if it was homosexual, you're dead. If it's bestiality, you're dead. If it's your dad's wife, you're dead. If it's your sister, you're dead. I mean, literally, it was kind of, you get anything outside the nine dots and you're dead. And part of it, and the rationale was, is that God had given them the land, and in order for them to be able to maintain the land and maintain their purity as a race, these things had to happen. Men, do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he is hungry. It is Leviticus 25:39 and Exodus 22:1-4. But when he is found, he must repay sevenfold. Here again, it's one thing to be hungry, down on your luck, and things ain't going right, and you find yourself going out to steal. No, this is not saying that stealing is okay. But what it is saying is that it's one thing to go out and steal because you're hungry. And even if you do, you have to pay sevenfold. All right? But, and here again, he must give all the substance of his house. Back in this time, and we visited a little bit 2 weeks ago about co-signing for notes and some of the monetary lessons that we'll find in Proverbs. And later on, when we get a little bit farther, we'll sum some of those up as well. But basically, there was a debtor's prison back then. I mean, you could sell yourself in slavery for finding yourself in debt to someone and not being able to repay it. We just think, you go through bankruptcy, wait 5 years, somebody will loan you money again kind of thing. Well, guess what? That's not their system. Now they did have a relinquishment of debts on a 7-year basis, but you could find yourself in someone's household as their servant in repaying your debts. The one who commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He who would destroy himself does it. Wounds and disgrace he will find, and his reproach will not be blotted out. For jealousy enrages a man, and he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not accept any ransom, nor will he be content though you give him many gifts. And we're going to run just a minute or two late, but that way we'll get through with six here. So here again, the one that commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He's someone that is willing to destroy himself. He will not, the wounds and disgrace he will find and his reproach will not be blotted out. You know, here again, it's kind of like, oh, there's Sam. Gosh, I remember, you know, 10, 15 years ago, he got caught stealing. Bless his heart, he's down on his luck. And, you know, he ended up not having enough money and he went in, he had to work for Joe for 5 years in you know, as a not a slave, but as a worker. But, you know, he's gotten himself out, he's gotten himself straight, and away he goes. You know, that's kind of the story that you would have for that guy. Well, guess what? There's Sam. Of course, in this time, he's supposed to be dead if he got caught committing adultery. And so there's Sam's grave. You know, what killed him was he got caught doing adultery. It was not something that society was going to allow to be blotted out. For jealousy enrages a man, and he will not spare in the day of vengeance. So when the husband finds out about it, and they're going to the court to decide whether they're going to stone him or not. All right, guess what? This kind of jealousy is not going to have the man saying, oh, let him off. He's going to have the man saying, let's stone him. Let's stone him. He will not accept any ransom, nor will he be content, though you give many gifts. The word ransom is atonement. In fact, in many verses where it talks about Christ as our atonement for sins, it's using some of the same definition there that's been basically translated here as ransom. It's to make atonement. In other words, once you've done this, the man that you've done this to is not going to accept any atonement. You know, your son, if you go down this path, you're not going to be able to buy your way out of it. You're not going to be able to negotiate your way out of it. And it doesn't matter how many gifts you give this guy, it ain't happening. And then besides that, you're not going to be able to ever blot it off of your reputation. You know, there's some things that might get blotted off your reputation. You know, stealing if you're hungry and down and out and so on and so forth. And understand this is the consequence of that. But if you go down this path, these are the consequences. Well, next week we'll go to chapter 7. We're on the same subject. But fortunately, in chapter 8, we're going to switch subjects a little bit. But we'll talk a little bit more about the adulterous woman. And like I said, in weeks to come and months to come, every so often we'll stop and have a Sunday where we'll try and coordinate a lot of the things that we've learned by subject instead of going proverb through proverb. All right, we've been through a lot, so are there any questions?